Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It may be March, and college basketball season, from what I understand, might be about to start. But it's never too early for us to get together as a college football community and talk about who the contenders could be for the 2024 season. Welcome into the Hardtown. It is Wednesday, March 13th, 2024, the last one on the face of the planet. Gonna make it a great one. Got a jam-packed show for y'all lined up. We got Phillip Dukes from the On3 Recruits Channel, from the five-star Flex show on the On3 Recruits Channel. Phillip Dukes about to join the show here in, I guess, 25 minutes or so. He's going to talk to us about Kalen DeBoer and what he's been doing on the recruiting trail, because Alabama now been cooking a little bit. There's a lot of narratives out there around what Kalen DeBoer maybe wouldn't do in the SEC as a recruiter. I had my own questions. I still have questions, but Phillip Dukes is going to bring the juice on that. And he actually has a great video, a great solo video, rather, on that very topic as to how Kalen DeBoer has been so successful, how he can be successful at Alabama on the recruiting trail. Excited to talk to him about that and pick his brain on all things what's going on in Tuscaloosa when it comes to recruiting. Nick Saban, speaking of Alabama, been retired for, like, I think 36 minutes, and he already is making waves in the college football world. He sat down at a round table on Capitol Hill and pretty much just talked his stuff on how he feels about NIL. Now, there was a headline that came out about how he said, basically, the things that I believed in as a coach for 50 years in this sport, those things don't exist anymore. These kids, they just want to get paid. And people took that and kind of ran with it and said, well, Nick Saban, hey, Alabama, they've been paying players for years, right? That's kind of the narrative that we've had in the SEC is, oh, it's always been an under-the-table deal. I think there's more to that whole conversation than what meets the eye from what Nick Saban said. And I think the sentiment that he was trying to get across. So we'll unpack that together. In 2024, there's a couple of teams that I think their window is right now. We got a handful of teams that I would define as the time is now for those teams. Those fan bases can confidently say, hey, this is our year to go and make something happen in this 12-team playoff. So we'll talk about that. And then, as I mentioned before, our contender series is starting today. Alabama, we're going to talk about them a lot on this show, but Georgia has typically had to go through Alabama over the course of the last couple of seasons to find their way into a national championship trophy. Alabama is going to have a recalibration period of sorts. Is it Georgia and Ohio State versus the field? We'll give you our thoughts there in a matter of moments. But we're glad to have y'all here. Everyone, make sure you're subscribed. I would love for us to hit 200,000 subscribers before we kick off the season. All right, so we're right around 163 or so right now. We get to 200, that'd be phenomenal. Also, you subscribing to the show just gives us a better gauge for the kind of content that you want to see, so we appreciate you for that. We're going to talk about contenders. We're going to talk about the fall. We're going to talk about recruiting. But here's the beautiful part about this season right now, man. The season we're in right now is spring football season. Okay, so they're running around out there with helmets, very few teams in shoulder pads right now, if any that we know of at this point in time. The bottom line is football is being played in some form or fashion. So with that being said, let's get to some of our intel and impressions that we have across the country for a couple of these different teams. Let's talk about Auburn. The good folks at Auburn Live, man, I'll tell you right now, get a membership over there. Jeffrey Lee, Justin Hokanson, Cole Pinkston, the entire team over there is crushing the coverage. Get dialed in if you're an Auburn fan. That's the place to stay up with every single thing from spring practice to what's going on within, you know, the sports world there on the basketball side of things. For spring football, get dialed in. Auburn Live, you won't be sorry. The overwhelming buzz from spring practice at this point is Cam Coleman just looks different. Just looks different. He's a five-star plus kind of player. We talked about him a lot here during the recruiting cycle on National Signing Day. 6'3", 190 pounds. And when I say he looks different, not just he looks different for a freshman receiver. Like, you look at that wide receiver group, and he sticks out like a sore thumb as a true freshman. The thought behind Auburn Live and behind pretty much every Auburn circle is that this guy is going to play as a true freshman. How quickly he's able to impact the game and the kind of efficacy he's going to have long-term at Auburn is going to be tremendous, but what he looks like as a true freshman will come down to how quickly he can get a hold of the playbook and just the things that you would expect any true freshman football player to have to acclimate to. And oh, by the way, he just arrived at college, so he's probably still figuring out where class is and where everything else is. So Cam Coleman, expectations are sky high, but he has earned those expectations by nature of what he did at the high school level and what he's doing right now, very, very early on in spring practice. Also, Peyton Thorne. He's been a topic of conversation for us on this show. You know that we have our own question marks around Peyton Thorne. I'm interested to see how he looks during that spring game. I think we'll learn a lot about how comfortable he is. But so far, the reports are that he's making the best decisions out of the quarterback group right now. Now, again, it's spring practice, more controlled environment. You don't have 100,000 fans screaming at you on a Saturday afternoon, fourth down, you're going for it. But even with that being said, good news is good news. Okay, so hearing Peyton Thorne is taking what the defense gives him right now during spring practice, you got to do it in practice before you do it in a game. So as of right now, hoping to cut down on that 10 interception number that he had a season ago. This is crucial, man. Like, it's no secret. This is not an offense at Auburn under Hugh Freeze where you can hide your quarterback. You can do some things to help him, and I promise you, Jarquez Hunter, Damari Alston, they're going to do some things to help Peyton Thorne pound the rock and kind of get those safeties rocking and rolling. But this offense will go as Peyton Thorne goes. And the biggest part of this is him making good decisions, okay? So I think last year what you saw from Peyton Thorne was a little bit of a cram session for him trying to get acclimated to Auburn. Because remember now, this is his first spring practice. He transferred over from Michigan State a season ago without those important 15 practices. I would argue the most important 15 practices that you get as a college football player, much less your quarterback, because you're installing everything. Everyone's kind of getting up to speed together. He missed all that. He missed the whole takeoff period of the Auburn offense. They just put him in the air and said, you're a pilot now, go fly this plane. I'm very interested to see how much spring practice benefits him. All reports are that he's been a vocal leader, and that's good news. What you expect from your quarterback, but that's good news that he's leading from the front. Jamonte Waller. Another true freshman cat, he's listed as an edge for them on their roster, a smooth 6'2", 235. The reports are he's one of the twitchiest players on the team. Not one of the twitchiest true freshmen, not one of the twitchiest defensive linemen or edge defenders, like one of the twitchiest players on the team. I don't want to put too much of a label on Jamonte Waller and what he's going to be at Auburn. I'll just say this, you need players with that description to win in the SEC in the trenches. Okay, So far, so good for Jamonte Waller. Again, he's a true freshman, four-star cat. You're excited about his progress. Last note here, co-DC and safeties coach Charles Kelly. Remember Charles Kelly? He was the DC at Colorado previously. He also was at Alabama, so he knows what good defense looks like. He knows what the standard looks like, having coached under Nick Saban. Sounds like he's keeping that high standard right now. It's only a few practices in. I believe they've had three practices so far out there on the plains, but there is a note here on this practice report from the good folks at Auburn Live. Again, get a membership, tons of more intel, tons more notes. This is just a very, very small sample size. He got after his DBs a little bit going through drills. Felt like they weren't going quick enough. Felt like they needed a little bit more of a sense of urgency. And apparently he yelled at those guys and said, hey, listen, don't be casual. Do not be casual. And anything that we do is basically the sentiment that he's saying there. So the standard's being kept high. And it's only spring practice. They're not wearing pads. It's hard to take a ton away from the defense at this point in time. But having a defensive coordinator, or a co-DC rather, a safeties coach, that is pushing the envelope a little bit, creating that sense of urgency, kind of getting after these guys a little bit, I think that's good news. And I think that's something that you'd like to see if you're an Auburn fan. Let's stay in the state of Alabama, though. Let's go out to Tuscaloosa. Bama Online, Tim Watts and company, all the coverage that you need, and then some when it comes to spring practice and what's going on in Tuscaloosa, man. It's a new era. Andy Staples and Tim Watts have a show on this, or a video rather, from Andy's show on this very channel. I would encourage you to go check out. It's new. It's a new Alabama spring practice. Like previously, Alabama, they provided some media access for the local folks out there. It was around 10-ish minutes. Most places will give you around 30 minutes. Not they're letting you see 11 on 11 or letting you see a whole bunch of competitive periods, but still being able to see individual drills, being able to see a little bit of special teams, like they're actually giving them some access now, which is, again, a very different reality than what they were dealing with during the Saban era when it comes to the media. There is a noticeable new energy. Not better energy. It's not different energy. Not bad energy. It's just different. Overall, it's just different. And they're playing music now. That was kind of, it's kind of like, whenever the private school allows free dress, for their Friday. Like, that's kind of the feel. It's like, hey, whoa, what's going on here? Is this okay? Are we allowed to do this? I'll say this. Every school in the country plays music at their practice. I promise you, Georgia, they play music at their practice, and they were just fine winning national championships. Michigan would have to imagine they play music at their practice. So the bottom line here is it's a more fresh-feeling Alabama. Ken Womack, defensive coordinator for them, it sounds like he's leading the charge. He brings a whole lot of juice to the practice field. When it comes to the quarterback position, we at least have to touch on it. Jalen Milroe taking first-team reps, going first reps with the quarterbacks there with the first offense. He's your guy until he's not, is my opinion. I don't know that to be the case, but I have to believe he's going to have to somehow lose this job. I would also say this, though. I don't think Jalen Milroe and his skill set fits best with this offense. I think he's your best quarterback. I think if you play to his strengths, he gives you the best chance to win by nature of what we saw last year with them being a play away from extending that Rose Bowl game, from them beating Georgia in the SEC championship. Jalen Milroe, I think, should be your guy. Now, with that being said, if you're going to ask Jalen Milroe to be Michael Penix Jr. from last year in that same style of offense, it's not going to mix. It's not going to work well. So I'm curious to see the reports we get at Bama Online as it pertains to how they're dialing up this offense, because they got some guys now that I think probably would perform better in a pro day setting than Jalen Milroe. Austin Mack coming over from Washington, he can spin it. Dylan Lonergan, he can spin it. Ty Simpson, he can spin it. Like, there's a lot of really talented quarterbacks in this room that might actually, I don't know this to be the case, but might be better passers, better throwers of the football than Jalen Milroe. So Jalen Milroe gets my vote to be QB1 in Tuscaloosa. I'm curious to see the buzz that generates over the course of this spring practice and into fall camp. Running back room looks good. Justice Haynes, Jam Miller, Richard Young, all 4-star cats. Yes, you lose some things in that running back room. They're going to be more than fine when it comes to toting the rock. Again, it's a new Bama. It might take some acclimation period for Alabama fans to get used to Kalen DeBoer's way of doing things. Totally fine. It's all good in Tuscaloosa. Yes, you lost some guys through the portal. The portal does what it does whenever you lose a head coach, especially when you lose the greatest head coach the sport has ever seen. But even with that being said, still a lot of talent on this roster. The secondary alone, I mean, Damani Jackson, Keon Saab, both transfers, Damani Jackson from USC, Keon Saab from Michigan. I expect them to be in that starting rotation when it comes time for football to be played. Damani Jackson was one of the best players in the country when he came out of high school. Keon Saab was a guy that was highly regarded when he jumped in the portal from Michigan. So there's still a lot of talent on this roster. Nick Saban did not leave the cupboard bare when Kalen DeBoer got there, even with the portal moves. So the vibes and the energy is high in Alabama, and I cannot wait till we get further and further into spring practice. I cannot wait for the A-Day. That'll be on ESPN. Everybody and their mama will be tuned into that one. The new era has begun in Tuscaloosa, and it sounds like some new juice has come along with it. So that's the spring intel again. Auburn Live, Bama Online, both places will keep you locked in for all things Auburn, all things Alabama throughout spring practice. That is just, I mean, an appetizer even feels generous in terms of what we just talked about. There's a ton more intel, a ton more notes over there at Bama Online, so get yourself dialed in over there, and you will not be sorry. Speaking of Alabama, though, man, Nick Saban, I said it at the opening, though, he's probably been retired for like 30 minutes or so, and he is already making his presence felt on the macro level when it comes to the college football world. Nick Saban's at a roundtable yesterday at Capitol Hill and made headlines when he said, the things that I believed in as a coach for 50 years in this sport, those things no longer exist. And he's, of course, referring to the way that players are approaching NIL as opposed to how they used to maybe approach their development. Because Nick Saban, we understand this, his bread and butter is you're going to come to Alabama, you're going to compete hard, you're going to compete against the best of the best in practice, and by the end of your time here, whether it's 3 years, whether it's 4 years, you're going to be a better football player because of how we developed you, because of the time you spent at Alabama. And so what he's saying now is how that used to be the priority for most of these guys, now the priority has shifted to, hey, what can you pay me? And he mentioned that in the Chris Lowe ESPN article, kind of chronicling Nick Saban's retirement and Kalen DeBoer being hired, how Nick Saban, they get back from the Rose Bowl and he's having NIL conversations with guys about, hey, how much are you going to pay me? How much are you going to pay me to stay at Alabama? And he's like, what are we doing here? We're not in it for football anymore. We're in it for getting a check. And so the other quote that he said that made some headlines was he was talking about essentially like in the NIL world today, and we all understand this is kind of how it's been, if you have the most money, if you raise the most money, you can afford the best players and give yourself the best opportunity to win. Nick Saban's not breaking news there, but because it was Nick Saban, it made more headlines because that's someone who's actually in the trenches of college football, who has seen the sausage made in that sense, and people are saying, whoa, whoa, whoa. Well, hey, the SEC, from what we've heard, what I read on message boards, everyone's been handing out bags of cash under the table for a while now. Okay, and Nick Saban, you're the one complaining about that? Let me be very clear. NIL has never, was never, and as long as Nick Saban was playing, was coaching college football, NIL was never going to hurt Alabama. Alabama was always going to be one of the haves in college football. Like, I do not understand the thought that, oh, hey, Nick Saban, he's running from the times. He wasn't able to keep up in the NIL era. He couldn't stand the fact that the playing ground was being leveled because other folks were now paying recruits. Because the perception, again, was, oh, all these SEC teams, they're handing out bags of cash. Whether that was the case or not isn't the point here. The point is that Alabama, again, was not going to be negatively impacted at a macro level on the NIL front. Because NIL at the base level, we talked about this on the show, it's about your care factor. How much you care about your football team to raise money, to give that money to your boosters or to your collectives or, heck, to your football program in some way, shape, or form, and then allow them to land the top players in the country. I promise you, Alabama, very engaged fan base, they would have been just fine. They will be just fine on the fundraising side of things. And don't just listen to me say that. Like, look at the proof in the pudding there. The last couple of seasons, Alabama has been phenomenal in acquiring talent. In 2023, number one class in the country. In 2024, number two class in the country. So, at the very least, they were putting together an attractive NIL opportunity for guys to come and play in Tuscaloosa. Alabama was never going to be hurt by the NIL era. Now, they may have lost a five-star or two to another place that was able to offer more to a player. I'm not pretending that situation never occurred. But when we talk about Nick Saban, this is not Nick Saban being down on NIL and running from NIL. He's saying, I don't like the priorities that it created for our guys, that it created for our players in this game. And this is where I want to kind of interject a little bit and provide my opinion here. I don't think Nick Saban is talking about the kids having their priorities out of whack. I think what Nick Saban is speaking to here in a roundabout way is the adults in the room that help provide the priorities, right? Like, at the end of the day, kids, they're 17 years old in high school, 18 years old. They get offered a check with a couple of zeros on it. Of course that's going to be what they see. Of course they're going to weigh that pretty heavily when it comes to what they're going to do with their college decision. They're 17-year-olds. Like, how are we blaming kids for being immature when they're immature to begin with by nature of the definition of what mature is? Like, we can't fault these 17-year-olds for wanting to make an NIL bag. Who I think we should fault here and who I think maybe needs to step up a little bit more here as NIL evolves is the adults in the room. The adults in the room have to step up here and say, hey, listen, that's great. You can make some money right now, but let's fast forward the tape here 4 or 5 years. Where do you want to be? You want to be in the NFL? You want to make that second contract kind of money? Okay, well, that means that you have to lean into your development. It all kind of comes full circle. The landscape changes, the realities change as a recruit. But at the end of the day, the main thing is still the main thing. If making money is even your priority, let's say that that's all that matters to you. If that's what matters and making big time money matters to you, NIL is great. The big money is going to come when you make the NFL. Like I just said, when you get that second contract in the league, that's where the payday is. And so the adults have to step up in the room here and say, that's nice that you're getting offered this, but let's lean into the development. Let's lean into the actual thing that got you offered that money in the first place. And so Nick Saban told a story how Miss Terry, his wife, would have breakfast on Sunday with the mother of the recruits. And she came to Saban and said, hey, why are we doing this? They just want to know what they're getting paid. Again, the adults in the room have to be the ones that step up here if we have issues with the priorities of these kids. So I'll tell you what, man, kids are very impressionable. They're very smart, but they're very impressionable. They get their priorities more than likely from the people that are the adults in the room or the ones telling them what their priorities should be. So Nick Saban is not anti-NIL. He has very clearly been pro-player from the start of this whole thing. He is pro-revenue sharing. He said that as well at the roundtable. Like, Nick Saban's pro-NIL. He's also pro-having your priorities in place to give yourself the best future. So Nick Saban, delivering truth serum, surprise, surprise, the GOAT stepping in there and dropping some knowledge on us. It is what it is. Hey, appreciate everybody tuned in live here. Make sure you've liked the video. Make sure you've subscribed to the channel, all that good stuff. Just a quick call to action. Helps us help you. We're going to keep on rolling here now. Phillip Dukes here in a matter of 5 or so minutes. Excited to talk to him about Alabama and what they're doing on the recruiting trail. Before we get to that, though, I want us to start this little series here. It's never too early to look ahead. Contenders for the national championship. We're going to talk about a myriad of teams here because I truly think there's probably somewhere in the range of 12 to 15 teams that could compete and win a national championship. But we got to start at the top and work our way down here. I want to start with the teams that I feel the most confident about, and that is Georgia and Ohio State. So I got to ask the question here. Is it Georgia and Ohio State versus the field? Because I think at this point in time, as we sit here in March, I think it's tough to make an argument that it's not. Because again, sitting here in March, I'm not predicting this is the national championship. I'm not predicting that they go undefeated and run the table. But I am saying, if you look at what these teams are right now, again, in March, which in March we focus on roster talent, focus on the coaching staff, they are the best set up for success. Like, I feel like I know the most about both these teams as we head into 2024. Now, college football has a ton of variables. Things can change. Things will change. That's why we love it. But still, look at what Georgia has in terms of certainties. They have certainties at a lot of major areas. Start at the top. Best coach in college football. Nick Saban's retired. Bada bing, bada boom. Kirby Smart's got the throne. Pretty straightforward. He's got two national titles in case you disagree. Arguably, I think, the best quarterback in college football. You can make a discussion for Quinn Ewers. You can make a discussion for a number of other guys across the board here. But I think for Carson Beck coming back in Mike Bobo's offense, going for year two of Beck and Bobo on the campaign trail, 70% of his passes completed last year. He gets a chance to get even better. That's dangerous. At the very least, you have a quarterback who is going to be equipped to take you to the SEC title and beyond that. Proven winning culture. The way Georgia does things in-house has proven. Like, it's proven that it gets the results. It's proven they can win. It's proven that for Georgia, as long as you buy into the way that we do things and you go 110% on Bloody Tuesday, you go 110% when it comes to what we do in the offseason, like, we're going to get you the results. And it's not just a coach speak thing. It's a reality when it comes to how they operate and what they do in the postseason. Men lie, women lie, trophies don't lie. Georgia's got a few trophies to go with what they have from a culture standpoint. Production, yes, they lose some guys on defense. There's no way around that. But you bring back Smile Mundon. You have a couple of young linebackers in that room as well that I think were a reason why some of those guys left. And I'll just say this. At Georgia, replacing production in Athens is very different than replacing production anywhere else. Like, you have guys that graduate or leave for the NFL at a different spot, and you know, maybe there's a question mark around who's stepping up next. I don't think there's a ton of question marks for these guys that are taking over on defense for Georgia. Yes, Will Muschamp steps back in his role. You got T-Rob, you got Glenn Schumann, you got Kirby Smart. As long as they're the ones overseeing the defense, you feel pretty confident. So that's Georgia. Now for Ohio State, you got a top 10 defense with everybody coming back, and then you sprinkle in the best player in the transfer portal, which is, of course, Caleb Downs. The defense is going to be awesome. They will be able to, in every single game, have a chance, I think, to match up well with pretty much everybody. I don't think we're stretching the truth in saying that. At quarterback, I think at the very least they upgraded. We'll see by how much. Will Howard, I think, again, I'll go back to what I was just saying. The upgrade of Will Howard and what he brings to the table here. More mobility, more experience. I'm not dunking on Kyle McCord. I hope Kyle McCord has a tremendous, tremendous college career and goes and balls the heck out in the ACC at Syracuse. I hope that for him. But Will Howard has played more games, has much more experience, brings the mobility element to the table there. I think that's an upgrade for you. And who's calling the show for you offensively? It's not Ryan Day anymore. Chip Kelly. Chip Kelly's your guy now that's running the show offensively. I think that's going to ultimately lead to a better offensive product for them. And then in terms of who they have at the skill positions, like, talk about proven commodities, Travion Henderson, 1,000-yard back. He's been that for Ohio State. Quinshon Judkins, beast in the SEC. He comes to Ohio State. Mecca Egbuka, he's proven he can be a guy for you. He's a big-time receiver when he's healthy. And then you add in Jeremiah Smith, which, I mean, who knows how good he could be, the top player in the class of 2024. Coming out and going to be a major force, I believe, as a true freshman for Ohio State. So all these things factored together, to go back to what I just said, I know the most about both of these teams in Georgia and Ohio State. But here's the other part of this. I think you look at their path to a national championship and going to 12 teams. We talk a lot about, oh, that's going to can help the Cinderella story of college football have a chance. It's going to help, you know, the little guys make a run at this thing. I don't know that it does. I don't know that it does, because what you do is you widen the margin for error for a Georgia and Ohio State. Who did they used to have to go through? Ohio State comes down to that last game of the season. You got to beat Michigan. Ohio State can go 11-1, drop that game against Michigan, hang out for the Big Ten championship somewhere else, get ready for the college football playoff, be hot at the right time, go win a national title. That is much more of a opportunity now for Ohio State than it was last year in the 4-team model. Same thing for Georgia. Alabama, I think they're going to be good. How good, you know, remains to be seen, but Nick Saban's not running the show out there anymore. Both Alabama and Michigan were previous boss levels they had to beat to get to where they wanted to go. You still want to beat those teams, don't get it twisted, but if you drop those games, and both those teams are question marks at this point, by the way, you can lose both those games and still have a chance to go win a national title. But here's the other part of this. The playoff schedule, I think, makes this very, very scary for the rest of college football. The conference championship weekend is December 7th. The first round of the college football playoff isn't until December 21st. So let's say Georgia and Ohio State both find their way to their conference title games and they lose. They got 2 weeks to get healthy. You give 2 weeks to Ryan Day and Chip Kelly and Kirby Smart to game plan? That favors them 10 times out of 10. I'm not saying it's a sure thing, but I do think it favors them in a massive way. The last thing I'll say here, the edge that both these teams come into the year with, I think can't be overlooked. Because, again, we're looking at roster, we're looking at talent, we're looking at coaching staff, but there is a reason why these teams have the guys back that could have gone to the NFL. And folks will be quick to say, well, NIL deals brought them back. Maybe it played a part. Maybe they didn't have the draft grade they wanted. I don't think that's irresponsible to assume it could be a factor. But when you look at, or hear rather, the way they talk about why they're back, you hear the words unfinished business. You hear the words we didn't do what we wanted to do last year. Ohio State, they got a whole bunch of guys that haven't beat Michigan in a minute. They want to get that done. Georgia, they feel like they should have won the national championship last year. They've been very transparent about that. So I'll just say this. Nothing more scary than a hungry dog. You got two hungry dogs, one in Columbus and one in Athens. So right now, I believe, as we sit here in March, it's Georgia versus the field. I know the most about both those teams, and I cannot wait to see what they look like in the fall. So again, we'll keep that series rolling here. That is our contender series. That's volume one. We got some more teams to get to. I'm not saying those are the only teams that can win a national championship, but if you had to put betting odds out right now, and they actually have in Las Vegas, those are the favorites for a reason. Now, talking about favorites, man, one of my favorite individuals to talk to on this show, the man, the myth, the legend, national recruiting analyst for us here at On3, has a banger of a show with the 5-star flex on the On3 Recruits channel, Mr. Phillip Dukes. Dukes the Scoop, baby. What's going on, man? How we living?
JD, what's going on, man?
Brother, we're doing good over here, man. I'm scrolling through my YouTube feed, and I see you dropped a video on the On3 Recruits channel, and we got Dr. Dukes handing out a prescription for the Alabama Crimson Tide. And in short order, I think Kalen DeBoer probably saw that, took notes, got the prescription, and they've been on a heater right now. I mean, landed one of the top athletes in 2025. Talk the people through your prescription, just so we're on the same page here, of how Alabama and Kalen DeBoer can keep this hot streak going.
Well, the first part of my prescription was to not lean away or shy away from the Alabama standard. A lot of times when you have guys that come into new situations, the first thing they want to do is say, hey, we're going to do it a new way. It's my way or the highway. They want to establish dominance in a way that could turn some people off. Well, I think Kalen DeBoer has done a really good job of leaning into Nick Saban's legacy and figuring out how can he add on to it or how can he do things differently but still keep people engaged. I think one of the best things that he did was the fourth quarter workouts, where there was something that was a staple of the Alabama program early on, but by being able to say, hey, look, you know what? We're not just going to say we're the new Bama, or we're not just going to say this is Kalen DeBoer's way or the highway. We're going to take the things that work to make this such a powerhouse program and kind of add to it and add his own flavor to it. And I think already it's been working super well for the Alabama Crimson Tide.
And it seems like even from spring practice, like you hear the buzz, hey, media's got more access. They're playing music during spring practice, which is like a new thing in Tuscaloosa. I mean, like, are recruits seeing that? And is that something that you think is making an impact? Hey, there's a new energy, there's new juice in Tuscaloosa right now with the staff?
Yeah, absolutely. The way that recruiting is being approached is the same aggression, but I think that there's more of a, I wouldn't say friendly, but it's more, it's still a lot of football, but it's more relatable. If I could say, if I were to put it in one word, I think the recruiting approach is a little more relatable, and the approach to football as well. When you talk about guys and how much connectivity there is between classes, you got a guy like Quay Russo, who was a five-star 2 years ago. Zion Grady's on his visit, a former Alabama commit who decommitted after Nick Saban left. And the person that he talked to on his visit was Quay Russo. And me knowing Quay Russo and having and knowing Zion, I know what they're saying. Hey, it's still football, but man, it's a little bit different. And it's not a bad different. It's a different where it feels like, yeah, this is a business, but we can enjoy it as well. And I think that's going to bode very well for Bama going forward.
I thought one of the most interesting parts of your prescription that you gave to the Alabama Crimson Tide was how they recruit in relation to the logo. Walk the people through that, because I think that made a lot of sense to me, and I think the people would be better for hearing Dr. Dukes and his take on that.
Well, when it comes to the logo, you have some coaches or recruiting staff members who they recruit aside from the logo, where it's, you know what, come to the school because of me. We have this great relationship. Come because of me and not the logo. Wherever I go, I want you to come with me. And then you got guys who recruit behind the logo, where it's, hey, this is Alabama. Don't worry about what I say. Don't worry about if I called you on Thanksgiving. Don't worry about any of that. Just worry about playing football at Alabama. And then you have guys who can blend both. And I think that Alabama's, my prescription for Alabama was to not just recruit aside the logo, behind the logo as well, but also recruit to the standard that Alabama has already set forth. So if you can recruit at the same pace that Alabama has with this new sort of energy, where it's a little more friendly, assistant coaches now have media access, where guys have more of a voice, and it's not just like the iron fist of Nick Saban, which was a diamond littered fist, so to speak, because of all the rings that he has. But it was still a heavy fist. So by being able to recruit with that more light, with lighter intention, so to speak, when it comes to how we deal with each other, I think that's going to bode very well. And by being able to still recruit to the standard and the logo, now the logo just gets bigger and brighter going forward.
Now, Deuce, here's my thought around Alabama. Like, I love that Kalen DeBoer is having some success. I love the momentum. But my question mark is still like, okay, even if you're in the top 10 in the class rankings come signing day, like, that might not be good enough, feels like the wrong phrase to use, but that might not be up to par for what Alabama's come to expect. Like, Alabama's been Alabama because they've been in that top three pretty much routinely every single year. They got a timeshare out there in that top three of the recruiting class rankings. Does it need to be top three for Kalen DeBoer to be successful? Or is it like, hey, we can be top 10 because Kalen DeBoer is such an effective coach and they're going to find a way to get it done regardless?
No, I think the standard is the standard. So I think top five. I'll meet you in the middle. Top five is about the lowest you can go at Alabama. Like, you don't continuously and repeatedly win national championships with top 10 classes. You win them with top five classes. You can litter in a top 10 class every now and then, but even in those top 10 classes, you have to have really exceptional players. Like, your three stars have to be exceptional. Like, when I notice the top teams, when they take three-star guys, they're usually 6'6", 330 pounds. Hmm. Or they're a 4'3". They may be a smaller guy who runs a 4'3". You're not taking gambles on guys who don't have exceptional traits. And I think that's the way Alabama has always been able to recruit. If you saw them take a three-star, it was a three-star guy who either had A, phenomenal film, who was undersized, B, phenomenal film, who was oversized, or three, bad film with the super athletic prospect. So I think when you think about those things and how you're able to balance out those easily identifiable top guys with guys who can add certain things to it, they'll be fine. But yeah, I think if Kalen DeBoer gets a top 10 class, if he's outside of that top five, it's going to be smoke in the city. He's going to hear about it.
It's just crazy because Kalen DeBoer is a guy that, you know, you hear so much about, hey, he's always done more with less. It's kind of that buzz phrase, not buzzword, but buzz phrase. I'm curious if it's going to be okay. Well, can he do more with more? Because I think he's going to have more than he's ever had on that roster in Tuscaloosa. Last question for you here, Dukes. Courtney Morgan is a name that I don't think a lot of college football fans know just yet. I think they need to know about him, the GM at Alabama coming over from Washington. How big of an impact is he having right now in the recruitment of some of these guys that are choosing Tuscaloosa or maybe visiting Tuscaloosa?
Yeah, I think from what I'm hearing, it's huge. He's one of the guys that when you get on campus, he's the type of guy that when you see him, he makes a certain he makes a certain impact the way he carries himself and the way that he can relate to people. So when I was in operations, there was something that I always said in my resumes that impressed people was being able to effectively communicate upward and downward in the chain of command. And I think that's something that Courtney Morgan has in spades. He can go talk to any kid from any walk of life, any parent from any walk of life, and the guys in the boardrooms who are able to say, hey, you know, the athletic director, or when feedback is needed, he's that type of guy who can speak effectively and communicate across the board. Well, that is something, it's like a natural resource that you can't get everywhere that he has that is really going to continue to make an impact in recruiting. Because if you got a guy from, for example, let's say Hoboken, Alabama, nobody's ever heard of it, okay? And this guy's from the West Coast. Being able to be relatable and talk about his experiences from Michigan to Washington to the city of LA is going to be something that will endear that player to that type of guy and can allow him to put that embrace around him, where you may have somebody who may be a little more socially awkward, but when he embraces him, it comes with the Alabama A. And I think that's super important.
Dukes the Scoop, baby, bringing the juice here on this beautiful Wednesday. Man, what can the people expect coming on the five-star flex over on the On3Recruits channel, man? What you got cooking?
So right now on On3Recruits, we've got Alan Henderson with a very in-depth interview, super impressive young man, a four-star from Elba, Alabama. Then we've got Ryan Montgomery, a four-star quarterback recruit from Findlay, Ohio. He'll be on Friday. And I've got another Dr. Dukes I'm cooking up, and it may be a few other teams in the SEC West. So, hey, just excited about having the opportunity to work with guys like yourself, and super juiced to be on On3.
Hey, schools across the country, check your insurance. Make sure you're good for the prescription for Dr. Dukes, okay? Get dialed in. Dukes, appreciate you, man. Thanks for jumping on, brother.
Always, JD, for sure.
That's the man, Phillip Dukes. Get subscribed to the On3Recruits channel so you don't miss an episode of what Dukes has got cooking on the five-star flex. Also, Josh Newberg and the Inside Scoop, bangers every single week. So get locked in over there. Recruiting doesn't stop. Thankfully, the On3Recruits channel doesn't stop either. So best time to be subscribed. And also follow Phillip Dukes at Dukes the Scoop on socials. All right, one more segment to get to here in just a matter of moments. Before we do that, though, again, make sure you're subscribed right here because college football doesn't stop. Okay, we talk ball all year long. We got some things in the works now. Got some things in the works. I don't want to announce them just yet for the spring season until we know for sure that they're locked and loaded. But with that being said, got some things cooking. Stay tuned. Being subscribed is the best way to make sure you don't miss it. Second way, follow me on the socials at Judy Pakel on Twitter as well as on Instagram. All right, let's keep it rolling now here. Y'all were phenomenal with the feedback we got from a little instrumental we played yesterday during one of the segments. So guess what? It's back, baby. It's all the way back, and we're back here talking a little bit about some of the teams, some of the fan bases that can confidently say, hey, the time is now. So a couple of the time is now teams in 2024, let's get right to it, baby. Let's start with Ole Miss, man. Let's not beat around the bush here. They've gone all in. They understand the opportunity in front of them. They've gone all in the portal. They brought back a ton of guys from last year offensively, Jackson Dart being the top dude, obviously, as your quarterback, Trey Harris. Big-time receiver for you. You add Juice Wells next to him. This offense should be unstoppable. The defense, you got Walter Nolan. This is the year. This is the year if you're Ole Miss. This is the year to really make a push at things. Bama, we talked about him a lot on this show. We have a question mark around them. Nick Saban was like the most sure thing in college football. You knew that Alabama was going to be a force. Kalen DeBoer is a great coach. We don't know what his Bama is going to look like. And so with that being the case, that's no longer a level that you have to beat to win the SEC. Now, you do have to beat Georgia to win the SEC, but here's the good news if you're Ole Miss. You don't have to win the SEC to make the 12-team playoff. You go 10-2 and handle business, which I think Ole Miss has a decent shot at doing, you're in the dance. You don't have to have the best season. You got to be hot at the right time if you're Ole Miss, and they got some weapons that can hurt you with whoever they line up against should they find themselves in that 12-team playoff. So the time is now for Ole Miss. Jackson Dart, he's here for this year. All these pieces, they're here for this year. Don't have a, oh, I wonder if we would have kind of statement after the season. Miami, very much so a time is now team. Now, to be clear, this is not their only window, but this, in my opinion, is the best window for the foreseeable future. What I just said about Ole Miss is true about Miami. Cam Ward, he's here for a year. You're not bringing him back next year. The dude already declared for the NFL draft one time, and you brought him back to college. He's not going to declare for the draft and come back a second time, all right? So Cam Ward, the ambiguity in the ACC also, I think, feeds into the idea that Miami has a window right now. I love Florida State. Florida State, man, I don't know what they're going to be. 83rd in returning production. I trust Mike Norvell. Big question mark in Tallahassee. Big question mark with DJU. Clemson, they've been on a downward trend. You've heard me talk about it many times on this show. Miami, Miami, Miami. Don't have a question mark after this season saying, well, what if we had maximized Cam Ward? A lot of pieces here. You see the positive trend. We talked about it yesterday on the show. They've made, I mean, massive steps in total defense and total offense. They're a much better football team from year one to year two. Can they take another step with Cam Ward? The time is now. You're not getting Cam Ward for another year. Penn State, also a time is now kind of team. Their window now is closing. It's closing because Drew Aller may or may not be back this time next year. Nick Singleton, Catron Allen, Abdul Carter, I'd be surprised if they were all back next year. Michigan is rebooting a little bit. I didn't say Michigan's down. Michigan is rebooting in terms of their production that they bring back. They're somewhere in the 120s, I believe, in terms of all of college football with returning production. New quarterback, new head coach in Ann Arbor. They're also not on your schedule. No Oregon on the schedule. You got Ohio State, and that's going to be at home. So you have this young talent nucleus that is ready to make another go at this thing. Can you maximize this 2022 class that was number 7 in America? Last time having them all together, can you make it count? Penn State, if not now, when? Is kind of the feeling for the folks in Happy Valley. You have to imagine. And the same thing has to be true for Ohio State. There is some built-up pressure for a number of reasons. One, the brand, the expectation, just what comes with playing football at Ohio State. They expect you to win the Big Ten, to win a national championship. Hey, no pressure. That's all we expect from you. Okay, so there's that. And then you couple that with the fact that they haven't met that expectation. So the pressure is sort of building behind that. And then on top of that, look at the roster. You have everything you need to win a national championship on paper. We'll see how Will Howard acclimates and what he looks like long-term this upcoming season. But the bottom line here is you got a top 10 defense. You add in Caleb Downs. You got two stud running backs that would start anywhere in the country. You got Jeremiah Smith, who I think will translate pretty quickly into the college game. You got Emeka Egbuka. Like, you got a savant and Chip Kelly calling the offense. Like, what else do you need if you're Ohio State? What else do you need? Genuinely, that's going to be the question that folks are asking. So it's not a the time is now in the sense that if they don't get it done, they're firing Ryan Day or Ohio State's in shambles. They'll never have another chance to win a national championship. I promise you, fast forward the tape a year forward, whether Ohio State wins the national championship or not in 2024, we're going to ask the same question and say, can they get it done? Is Ohio State going to be able to do that? Because that's what we expect from them. But with all they have on their roster, all they have on this staff, all they have back, the time is now to make a move in Columbus. Now, Florida's also on this list for me, and you're saying, JD, the time is now. You just named a couple of teams that are going to compete for their conference championship, if not in the college football playoff. I think Florida is a the time is now kind of team, but in a very different sense, because Florida now is going into year three. It's time for some return on investment. It's time for them to really put into action what they've been working on behind closed doors. They were close to a couple of games last year. Now, close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades, from what I understand. That's an expression I never really totally understood, but it is what it is. You've seen Florida be pushed around in the media for a while, right? Like, you've got folks that are already ready to sell Billy Napier down the river, and who's going to be the next head coach at Florida? Do that if you want to, but they said the same thing about Mike Norvell when he was 5-7, missing a bowl game, and then they popped for a 10-win season. Greg McElroy on his show, which I believe is always college football. They do a great job over there. We'll have to get him on the show again sometime soon. I thought he said something that was very, very fair and something that I think a lot of folks don't want to acknowledge. Like, Florida is still a team that has a ton of talent. And the way that Greg put it, like, Florida is still Florida. Like, people are just ready to sell them down the river, like I just said, and ready to put them in the coffin. Like, Florida was two plays away from being 7-5 last year. 7-5 would be a one-win improvement from year one. So I understand the win-loss column thing hasn't worked out, But here's what I would say, too. The reason why it's a the time is now team, the reason why the time is now for Florida to really make something happen and show some real progress is your environment dictates what's demanded. What I mean by that is whatever you have around you, whatever your climate is, that is going to very clearly tell you what you need to do. Okay, look at the old Big 12. You need to have a quarterback. Probably need to score 40-plus a game if you want to be successful in that conference. Talk about college football and the way that it changed a couple of years ago. You got to be able to score points, go up tempo. Nick Saban sees that, goes out and changes OC. They start recruiting differently. You got to recruit a faster defense. Like, your environment dictates what's demanded. Florida's environment is they're in the most fertile recruiting ground in all the United States. You got Miami on one side, Florida State on the other, both which I believe have an arrow pointing up in terms of how they're trending. Florida, the demand is you got to show something this year to keep pace. You can't have 3 years of 6 wins or so. Last year was 5 wins. It is what it is. You got to show something this year to say, hey, Florida's heading this direction for a number of reasons. Obviously, the brand itself, but going back to the climate, fertile recruiting ground. Guys that want to stay in state. Guys that have two other options around them to stay in state, to be successful, and to be able to go play college football close to home. Florida is the school in the conference. Right? Like that. Like, let's not shy away from that. Kids want to play in the SEC. If they can have a reason to go to Florida, that would be massive. And the reason would be the on-field production this upcoming season to bring them to Gainesville to stay home. So, year three, been a couple of years. The first year, you kind of get a pass. The second year, we understood it was going to be a little bit of an uphill battle. This third year, though, it is a show-me year. The climate dictates what you have to do, dictates demand. So with that being the case, I think Florida is definitely a time-is-now kind of team in a very different sense, but nonetheless, a time-is-now team regardless. So get at me on the socials, man, at JD Pakel, Twitter, Instagram. One of my favorite things is to open up those apps and see a DM from one of y'all, see a tweet from one of y'all with a question, with a take. That is the best part of this whole thing, this college football community, being able to have the interaction back and forth. Because if it's just me talking into a microphone, looking into a camera, that's great, but that's not really what college football is. College football is a we thing, a community thing. So we appreciate y'all being a part of this community. And we make sure that we go to the community that's tuned in to the live show. So if you're listening on podcast, shouts to y'all. A lot of college students that I'm sure are enjoying their second year or their second semester of their senior year. Shouts to y'all, whether you're a junior, kind of grinding for the internship. However you're dialed in via podcast, shouts to y'all. We appreciate y'all for being dialed in. But if you're watching the live show, you get two tremendous pleasures in this life. One is being able to see Nick break and his beautiful mug. And the second is to get your thoughts in at the live chat. So with that being said, Nick Bright, what's going on, baby? How are you living?
Pretty good.
You're glowing today. It might be. Is it your ping pong victories you're taking out here?
Oh, I'm not taking any wins in ping pong. Our co-producer, Trey Yannity, is destroying me every time we play.
Maybe I saw the script room. Then. Maybe the script leaked of today where you go 3-0 at the table.
Well, I've already lost this morning.
Okay. I mean, 3-1 after 3-0 after lunch, I meant.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Hey, this is an interesting question, JD, to start out with. Dr. Gonzo, who's been at war in the chat, said a pretty interesting point, and I want to see if you can think about it off the top of your head. He said, name a current coach who's beaten Kirby Smart.
Let's see. Well, Saban's retired.
Yep.
They just beat him. They had a rough first year, so I'm trying to think of all who beat him. I'm looking foolish right now, even trying to
remember. Well, but this is a tough question. Let's go to the live chat. Guys, if anyone can tell us a current coach who is at the same school that they were at, man, that'd be impressive.
Did they beat because Vandy beat Georgia.
When was that?
A couple of years ago.
Same coach?
No, different coach. Derek Mason was there.
Yeah, that different coach.
Man, Josh Heupel wasn't at Tennessee when they beat Georgia on the Hail Mary.
That Real Dynasty say Coach O. That Coach O does not coach LSU. So
Coach O doesn't coach LSU.
That does not count. Good point, though. 2-0 against Kirby Smart.
Dude, I'm swinging and missing here.
Yeah, I really don't know if there is a current coach who is at their same operation.
I think there definitely is, but I'm just trying to think of who it would be.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
This is a really great question. Dr. Gonzo is
a tough one, man.
Yeah. So this is a really good point. It was in an
Tom
argument.
Tom Herman was at Texas when they.
But not at Texas now,
he's
though.
He's not there anymore.
I really don't think there is a current coach who's at their spot who has beaten Kirby Smart. So really interesting point in an argument. That's how to argue, man. You don't come at people. Just ask a good question that
so
people
foolish.
Can't answer. But it's genuinely, JD, it was a really good point that Dr. Gonzo made. So
That's why he's a doctor.
That is why.
That's why
just like Dr. Scoops.
Dr. Dukes and Dr. Gonzo, just a very medical show today.
Yes, absolutely. JD, I didn't mean to blank you. I think
no,
that
I love
anyone
it.
Could
I love
have been
it.
Blanked by that question.
We're going to leave this studio. I'm going to go and do a deep dive and see if we can find an answer to that question. It's a great question, Doc.
Yep, absolutely.
Great question.
Very good. OG Gary, a good pal, says which 1-2 teams per conference, maybe just do it in general for time circumstances, are underrated or sleepers that could take the P4, that sounds weird to say, by storm.
Underrated sleepers in the power conferences. Man, I'm very high on Texas Tech.
I was gonna say
very
that
high on Texas Tech, and there's not a tremendous quantifiable reason why. I love Joey McGuire. Also, I love Luke Fickell. They went 7-6 last year. We might have been a year early on the old Badgers in Madtown, but I think they're going to be a team that's kind of a sleeper of sorts out there in Big Ten country.
Yeah, great pick.
How about OG Gary bringing the juice today?
How about Ferris Khan bringing this juice? He says, name a current coach that's beaten Sharon Morris head coach. There's not one either.
There isn't one.
That's also
true.
There isn't
one.
Good point. Also from Ferris, does Michigan having Jack Tuttle, former 4-star, 7th year approved, a guarantee that the quarterback floor is at least very high?
Yeah, it does. It does. And to be clear, Jack Tuttle may not be a world beater for you, but he's at least going to be a steady force to where you could put him in the game and feel like, okay, we got some stable hands on the wheel. We may not have the engine or the horsepower we want offensively, but we got some stable hands on the wheel. Also, the fact that he's been there for a minute, that's massive. Now, I understand I don't think he's been at Michigan for the entirety of those 7 years, but he has been at Michigan for at least – he at least was there under Sharon Moore this previous year. So that's massive having him there. And good for Jack Tuttle playing some more ball. I would be – Nick, I'm going to call my shot here.
Mm-hmm.
I think they go to the portal.
Yeah, they
I
they,
really
they
do.
Will.
I really do. And I love Alex Orji, but I just feel like with what they have on that offense, I think they're going to go to the portal and get somebody. Now, maybe, who is that going to be? I have no idea. But
maybe someone who doesn't win the job at Alabama in spring.
See, that's the thing, man. I sort of get a little bit timid with those conversations because I don't want to.
Yeah,
to get
that,
in trouble.
That's true. You don't want to ever.
But you know.
But there are good people who won't win jobs. Places.
You start putting the pieces together here. Yeah. You only have one quarterback on the field at the time. There's a lot of loaded quarterback rooms.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying. There's also a loaded quarterback room within their conference that they don't even say that team's name.
Yes. Oh, my God.
I'm just saying.
It's a fair point. There
I'm
is
just
quite,
saying that would be. Can you imagine the college football drama?
Yeah, that's Babe Ruth.
We didn't even say what the team was, so you can fill in your own blank
we
there.
We didn't. Now
Iowa. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Caden McNamara somehow has returned.
That would be a storyline and a half, golly.
Jonathan Rayfield, our resident Nebraska fan, says, how do you think Oklahoma and Texas will fare in the SEC this season? Super excited to see them play some big dogs.
Yeah, we talked about this actually on a radio hit the other day. I get the uncertainty around Oklahoma. I think it's fair. We just know more about Texas right now, and that is, in my understanding, how you put together a line for the 2024 season. So, Texas, you got the quarterback back. You did great through the portal. I just feel like they're getting started, man. I feel like they're just getting off the ground out there in Austin. I think their best football is ahead of them. Playing a first-year starter in the SEC at quarterback in Jackson Arnold, as talented as he is, there might be some growing pains. He might be awesome, but there might be some growing pains for them. And I'd be surprised if they're not – you know, I think they'll probably take the over there, 7.5 wins. I bet they get the over there, but I think Texas probably hits the ground running a little bit more. But – I think both are going to be fine. I don't think either one is going to have this massive fall off as they move to the SEC. I think maybe some folks at different fan bases across that conference would like to see.
Yeah. Good point. Neon King, JD. So earlier today I asked in the poll, will Alabama win a national championship in the next 10 years? 65% of the chat says yes. Neon King asks, do you think Oregon will win a natty in the next 4 years? So a little bit of a smaller time window.
If you had said 10, I would have smashed the deal button, like Howie Mandel.
Glad you didn't.
Deal or no deal, Howie Mandel?
It used to be. Now it's deal or deal, no deal island, but some other guy's doing it. But
I never know.
He did. Now it's he's on America's Got Talent.
Oh, okay. I was worried.
No, deal or no deal was Howie.
I wasn't sure if he was canceled or not. I was like, no, I just step into something there.
He's cool.
Okay, well, that's good news. Deal on Oregon in 10 years. 4 years? Gosh. I mean, if you're making a case, they got Dante Moore. Mm-hmm. So you feel good about the quarterback position relative to his recruiting prowess coming out of high school. Next 4 years? It's March in 2024. Let's call our shot. I'll say yes. I think in the next 4 years, Oregon wins a national title. We'll be in the Big Ten.
Okay.
Keep recruiting well. I love Dan Lanning. I'd buy as much stock as I could in that guy and what he's doing out there. I'll say yes.
Okay.
I'll say yes. What do you have a take there, Nick?
I do not have a take there. Okay. But I do really like Oregon.
I thought maybe I was getting some telepathy.
No.
Maybe we're on the same Wi-Fi for a second. I thought you were going
to
say yes.
If you say yes, I'm going to go ahead and say yes too, because I do like Dan Lanning.
You're a good man.
And he was cool to talk to.
He was cool. He was a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
Great guy. We've talked to some really good, just good human beings.
Yes, I agree. And I think all of them have been really cool so far. Yeah. King Epic. Let's end on King Epic. We got to talk to a doctor and Dr. Gonzo and Dr. Scoops. Now we're talking to a king.
Royalty.
Yes. King Epic says, ask JD, in the first season of new conference alignment, do you think any teams will go 12-0 in the regular season?
Ooh. I'm assuming he's saying just any teams. So I'm assuming we're talking like Georgia could go undefeated and that would count. Is that accurate? Are you interpreting that the same way?
I am, yes. So I would say any team in general.
Any team in general.
Yeah.
You know, I think we will. I mean, what I said a second ago with Ohio State and Georgia, I don't know that I feel great saying Ohio State's going to go undefeated. They're going to go to Eugene, I believe, in October. I think Georgia could run the table. We'll call our shot here when it gets closer to the actual, month of games being played. But, like, I think Georgia, as we sit here in March, what I just said, best coach, arguably best quarterback, best culture, proven results, like all these things line up to where I'm like, I don't see a reason why they couldn't run the table. Now, the SEC will be brutal. They'll play Texas in Austin, got to play Alabama. Like, they'll have some just brutal games where they got to play in the regular season. But if I were to pick a horse in the race to go 12-0, I'd pick that horse hanging out there in Athens, Nick.
Yeah, me too.
Good one from King Epic.
Absolutely.
Hey, that's a couple of kings now. I got King Epic, King Nick Brake,
yes,
running the show,
yeah,
Dr. Gonzo, Dr. Dukes. What a stacked show.
It was a good one. And Ferris Khan, I don't know if he's talking about me, Nick, but he said, is seventh-year quarterback Jack Tuttle older than Nick? I think so. If you're referring to me, yes, he is 5 months older than me.
Oh, really? So, how old is Jack Tuttle?
April 28th, 1999. I was also born in 1999.
Dang.
So he's a young dude.
Good for him.
Or an old dude, I guess.
Good for Jack Tuttle, man. Still playing ball.
Yep.
Nick, what do you say? Same time tomorrow?
Same time tomorrow, man. Let's do it.
Let's rock. The Real Dynasty is saying JD hyped Georgia fans way too much. Well, if people get hyped off of our opinion here, so be it.
Well, he got us with a fact, but I mean, who did Georgia just lose to? They lost to Nick Saban, and so,
facts, man.
We can
facts
go back and forth. That could go back and forth all day long.
Those pesky facts will get you. Hey, we appreciate y'all being dialed in, man. Same time tomorrow. Talking ball. It's a beautiful, it's March. It's March and we're filling an hour live on the air talking college football. How wonderful is that? We appreciate y'all. We do not take for granted the fact that you watch the show, that you spend time with us. You got a lot you could be doing. You have a lot of other shows out there that are options for you. We're glad you're here. Make sure you subscribe before you get out of here. If you're watching or listening rather on podcast, rate, review, all that good stuff. Just helps the show. High tides raising all boats. We love y'all. We appreciate y'all. We are going to keep this party rolling. And we will see y'all next time.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See why CNBC ranks Minnesota number 4 best state to live and work. A great place to work, an even better place to live. ExploreMinnesota.com/live.